This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Undocumented immigrants that come to the United States looking for a better life face myriad challenges. One of the most difficult is having to find ways to bypass the numerous documents and papers that citizens and legal residents take for granted. Whether it's needing a driver's license to drive a car or a social security card to work, undocumented immigrants face a daunting maze of legal paperwork. Exploring that in a new book is Kate Viara. She is an assistant professor of English at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and she's written a book called American by Paper, How Documents Matter in Immigrant Literacy. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Now, your own family's background is from the Azores, a set of islands near Portugal. I'm not sure how many Americans are familiar with it, and I have to admit I had to go and look it up. But your family is also from Brazil. And so for the people that you interviewed in your book, there are people from both communities in the U.S. whose common language is Portuguese, I imagine, and they all live in a town that you refer to South Mills. It's a name that you created, a fake name of this town. Tell us about the interviews you conducted and what you were exploring about how paperwork and literacy impacts immigrants.
Well, you know, when I first started this research, I wasn't interested in papers at all. I was interested in exactly the facet of this that you highlighted, which is the fact that people from Brazil and people from the Azores had a common language, Portuguese. And I was wondering if maybe they used Portuguese in ways to get ahead, in ways that we imagined that people usually use English to get ahead. So my questions were all about language and literacy. And when I would ask people about literacy and about language, they kept telling me stories about papers. And papers kept recurring in the interview. And it took me several rounds of analysis after I had conducted the interviews to realize that the real story about literacy that people were telling me was not about language. In fact, language was not really that central to their fundamental struggles, the goals that they had for themselves within the United States. It was really papers. People were traumatized by their experiences of trying to get papers. Without papers, their lives and livelihoods were deeply restricted. They were separated from their families. So papers, it turned out, was the real story.
And so when you say papers, what are you talking about exactly? We're not necessarily talking about like the ultimate permanent resident card. I mean, even something as simple as a social security card, a driver's license, or even lesser things?
Sure, absolutely. What's interesting about papers, you know, as one participant put it, everything you need to do depends on a document you don't have. So what's interesting about the way papers work is that it's a chain, right? So to have a social security card, you need one kind of document. To get a driver's license, you need another kind of document. So the papers kind of build on each other to develop these legitimate American identities. And what's interesting about papers is that they were so important for the people that I spoke to that, in fact, they would seek out papers in many different avenues. So, for example, some participants who were undocumented would document themselves in the context of ethnic churches. They would get missionary cards, for example. And it didn't mean with a missionary card they could drive or vote or be protected from being deported. But it offered some kind of symbolic comfort. And they would say, I have this missionary card. That means I can legally go preach. And so that was really significant. So papers were important practically, but they were also really important symbolically and for people's sense of belonging within the United States.
And so, of course, this is what we judge immigrants by here in the United States. The difference between one immigrant and another, one person from a country and maybe another person from a very similar demographic from the same country, might simply be that one person has a document that says that they're allowed to, you know, drive or have a job or stay in the country without deportation, and the other person who doesn't, right? I mean, we essentially create these artificial constructs as a society.
Right. And I mean, the sad fact is that it becomes not artificial. It becomes a real dividing line between people. So, you know, we often think, oh, to assimilate into the United States, you need English literacy. Well, you know, fine, plenty of people had literacy, but what could they do with that literacy, and what could they do with that education, without papers? So, you know, there's research, on young people who learn that they are illegal, and the scholar has called it learning to be illegal. And one of the things that they find out when they learn that they are in fact undocumented is that all of a sudden their image of themselves as getting a job at 16, learning to drive, going to college, all of that radically shifts. So the life prospects for people with papers and without are quite different, even though, you know, for one participant who looked phenotypically very white, and who spoke English fluently, she said, you know, nobody had ever asked her for papers. So I think there are cases in which people can pass, but not for the majority of people.
So how did the two groups of people that you interviewed sort of differ in terms of their literacy, their literateness, their ability to access and navigate these labyrinths of paperwork? Does that trickle into their experiences also then of race and class as well?
Yes, that's a beautifully complex question. So let me just start by saying that people from the Azores traditionally had very limited education, and part of that had to do with the labor conditions in Massachusetts. The factories until recently provided a living wage for people, which made it much easier for people to go to work than to finish school.
And Massachusetts being their new home.
Exactly. And those from Brazil, more newly recently arrived, often came from bigger cities, often came with a bit more education. However, you know, without papers, Brazilians were largely undocumented. They couldn't leverage that education. And for Azorians without the advanced literacy education, papers, their sense of American as papers became more important to their sense of identity and belonging, because they were essentially disenfranchised from moving forward through educational channels. And that's a little bit changing now.
And so the Azorians who may be able to pass as white, I mean, I'm assuming they
Yes.
are in general more often lighter skinned, although of course Brazil has huge sort of racial heterogeneity. But despite their sort of skin privilege, the Azorians might have been very much sort of hamstrung or limit, you know, had their lives limited because of not being able to access this paperwork and these bureaucracies.
Well, Azorians were largely documented, so they were able to access the
Ah,
bureaucracies.
okay.
Their experience of being a minoritized population has to do with more with social class. Has
Now,
to do
of
with
course.
social class can kind of color one's experience. So, and that's like a particularly regional phenomenon for Azorians. For Brazilians, on the other hand, they often experience themselves, many of them experience themselves as non-white for the first time within the United States, and expressed some concern and perplexity around our categories of racial categorization, because Brazil, of course, race is understood much differently along a much wider spectrum. Although, you know, people did face racism and realize that they were being prosecuted for documents because of the color of their skin. So,
Right.
one community leader, a priest in one of the Brazilian churches, he was describing one of his congregants that was picked up for not having papers. And I said, "Oh, well, how did ICE know that they didn't have papers?" And he said, "Well, they didn't look American." And I said, "You mean they didn't look white?" He said, "Exactly."
Right, and that's where race and documentation sort of intersect, and racial profiling intersects with what ICE and our immigration authorities do. I want to bring up the issue of religion, and you talk about this in your book, how the church, you know, becomes this larger than life entity, a very important institutions in the lives of immigrants. And you related the story earlier about someone, you know, having a small piece of paperwork from a religious institution being something that that's really precious to them. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, you know, essentially, the churches were fascinating, and I never thought that I was going to find myself in these evangelical Brazilian churches or in the Catholic Church that I also went to as part of my fieldwork. But essentially, people were and are without documents written out of the United States. And what I found in churches is that there were spaces where they could write themselves into a certain kinds of belonging. So people read and wrote so much within the context of churches. They wrote supplications. They wrote songs. They were preaching. It was a hub of literacy activity where people could have the voice that they otherwise couldn't have. So, you know, people during my interviews and my fieldwork, people would sing moving songs that they wrote that would then speak to different immigrants. So essentially, you know, written out of the nation, they wrote their way into a church. And what's interesting from the perspective of the history of literacy about this is that churches are older bureaucracies. In fact, they predate the state. So it's almost as if people needed a bureaucracy in which to write, to kind of hang their belonging on. If the state wanted to count them, or if the state discounted them, they too wanted to count. They wanted to count themselves through writing.
Now, certainly the church is a big bureaucracy. However, churches like to proselytize, are always looking to increase the herd. And so the church is an institution with a large bureaucracy that might much more readily allow people to write themselves in rather than, of course, the state, right?
Yes, certainly the churches were benefiting. Certainly the churches were benefiting. And in fact, some of the churches I visited have kind of sketchy, how can I say this? You know, they weren't trusted by everybody. And they're these big transnational institutions. You know, as an ethnographer, I kind of tried to understand that from the perspective of the people who were worshiping and who believed. And, you know, one woman, for example, she was, her roommate attempted to rape her, and she didn't want to go to the police because she didn't have documents. And so where did she go? She went to church, right? And
so churches have, in fact, also traditionally been sanctuaries for undocumented immigrants.
Exactly. And, you know, there are cases the one case in Chicago where the woman stayed in the church is, you know, to avoid deportation. So, yeah, I think that there is, you know, there's a very conservative aspect of organized religion, and also I found quite a liberatory experience among participants, especially the undocumented.
We take papers for granted, we meaning those of us who are documented, who might be citizens or who might be legal residents. But I remember, I mean, I'm a naturalized citizen, and I remember a time when I was standing, you know, trying to, because I was lucky enough to come here on a student visa, lucky enough that the man I married was a U.S. citizen, but still having to stand in these endless lines, having to risk losing paperwork, which actually happened once or twice, work permits to work, you know, one form after another to fill. And, you know, I'm fairly educated, and it was still challenging for me to have to fill out this paperwork. And still, I ended up having to sue the government to become a citizen because I was caught in some loophole waiting for a background check that never happened. And so this myth that we have, that if you have the right papers, you can be admitted into this exclusive club of citizenship or residency, is still really a myth, isn't it?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm sorry that you had those experiences.
It's nothing compared to what undocumented people go through.
Certainly. But even, you know, half of the participants that I spoke to were, in fact, documented.
Right.
And they had stories, often had stories similar to yours. And I think what it speaks to is the way that documents infuse the process of becoming American in really profound ways. So people who were documented also spoke really passionately at length about paper. In fact, I think it curtails people's ability to feel like they belong as part of the nation. So the title of the book, American by Paper, is from a woman who became a naturalized citizen. She failed the English literacy test on several occasions and finally passed. But the experience was so disheartening and so alienating that at the end of all of this, she really wanted to become American. At the end of all of this, she said, you know, I'm not really American. I'm just American by paper. I'm just American. I just have the papers that say I'm American.
And of course, we as a society, the state treats people with papers differently from those without, even though these papers are superficial, and having the right papers, you know, makes you more legitimate in society. Now, there are states like in California where there have been huge battles fought, and in California won, over simply being able to let undocumented immigrants apply for driver's licenses. And this basically became a huge issue. And I remember trying to get my driver's license renewed at the same time that this law went into effect, and there were long lines of, you know, people sort of relieved and hopeful, waiting in line to get a tiny little plastic card that could mean the difference between, you know, being able to work and not being able to drive. And not, I mean, how important was that moment?
Driver's licenses matter so, so deeply. I mean, I cannot say how people would drive in fear around the streets. And I found driver's licenses to be important, especially for young people who, again, in my interviews, kept talking about cars, how being in the United States, you could buy a car more easily than you could in Brazil, for example. And I couldn't quite understand why they were talking about cars. But, you know, driver's licenses matter because they give us mobility, and mobility and cars are these quintessentially American, I think, attributes, right? You can go where you want to go. You have the freedom. You have the freedom to move up, to move around. And so people spoke of being really terrified in cars, and in fact, in ways that really shaped their educational trajectories as well. So one young woman spoke of having to go to a required internship for her major. She wanted to graduate from college as an undocumented woman, and she was terrified every day, driving in her car the 30 minutes to get to the internship. And then when one of her colleagues, somebody who was undocumented, was driving with her, she was afraid that he would find out that she was undocumented. So there was this feeling of anxiety about movement. And in fact, people would talk about how they felt like they couldn't even go out on the street. And one participant said, pretty soon they'll prohibit us from walking. So I think driver's licenses, yes, they, you know, without one, it's hard to drive to go to work, especially in places that don't have public transportation. But it also means that you don't get to participate in the movement of life.
And when we think of language and being able to be literate and, you know, having to, you know, being able to fill out paperwork and participate in life, that is part of assimilating in American society. And yet, is it really, right? In the work that you did and the people that you interviewed between the documented and the undocumented immigrants, the Azorians and the Brazilians, literacy was essentially a path to just essentially the right kind of paperwork, the chance to be considered whole and legitimate and accepted in American society?
Sure. And, you know, one of the interesting pieces to come out of this research is that people, the people with whom I spoke, who told me their stories, they wanted to belong as part of the United States, but they weren't especially interested in assimilation. Mm. Their discussions really focused around this issue of mobility that driver's licenses evoked. They wanted to be able to come to the United States and leave with ease, which is something you can't do if you are undocumented. They wanted to be able to use their literacy and their papers, including, you know, visas and green cards, but also diplomas. They wanted to be able to move up in the world. They wanted to be able to use their educational credentials within the United States to then go do more education in Italy or elsewhere. So really the discussion was more about how could they move in a world that is globalizing, economically competitive, and restricted by borders that are policed by papers. How could they use papers and literacy to move, to get where they wanted to go? I mean, people, people had these dreams and aspirations and oftentimes were really hamstrung, and you could just feel them kind of revving their engines.
Right. And so the sort of anti-immigrant conservative rhetoric looks at immigrants in terms of how they can assimilate into our quote unquote culture, whereas immigrants would like to live normal lives, would like to, you know, simply have dignity and have autonomy and have the freedom to be able to move around. That's pretty interesting. It seems like an obvious fact, but I guess you found that in actuality through these interviews. Well, Kate, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. So your book is in bookstores. People can just find it there. Is there a website you'd like to give out?
You know, the book is available on the University of Minnesota Press's website, American by Paper. It's also available on Amazon.
And we'll post a link to where people can get the book from the University of Minnesota. Thank you so much, Kate.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Kate Viara is an assistant professor of English at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and her book that we've been discussing is called American by Paper, How Documents Matter in Immigrant Literacy. This is Rising Up with Sonali. And I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.